Good. So, yeah, today I wanted to talk about how we can open our awareness in meditation to include more and more aspects of our experience. And so a very classical way to think of the unfolding of a meditation retreat, and also can happen in the single sitting, is that you choose a more particular focus to begin with. So we may focus particularly on the breath or on contact points in the body, for instance. And that as we do that, it creates some sense of gathering, some sense of a collected mind. Things begin to slow down a little. There's more of a sense of being present with a particular object that we're focusing on. And then as we do that, then there's the opportunity to broaden and widen the awareness to include more and more other aspects of experience. So including, you know, different sensations in parts of the body, including our feelings, including thoughts, including sounds, and then really eventually including all that comes and goes. So we can practice with an open awareness. And as we do that, we can notice different parts of our experience. And one that's very helpful to be aware of is what's called mindfulness of mind states, states of minds, or mindfulness of moods, I sometimes say. And with this contemplation, we start to see, to quote John Peacock, who uses this phrase, we are always in a mood, which is a helpful starting point. We're always in a mood. Now, if somebody says that to you normally, you know, you're always in a mood, it sounds as if they're criticizing you, meaning it's a shorthand for you're always in a bad mood. But I don't think it's meant like that. What it means is that we're always in some kind of mood. And that mood is like a filter on our experience and shapes our sense of all that's around us, shapes the sense of ourselves and what's happening. So you can see moods as being a little bit like coloured glasses, coloured spectacles. You know, if you put on green spectacles, the whole world looks green. Red, the whole world looks red. And there can be times when we don't quite know that that's what's happened. We think, oh, you know, the world's really red today. And there's that moment of waking up where we realize, there's a state of mind here that's making things appear like that. And so, yeah, you can play with this, really. You can think about how differently things would appear when different states of mind were present. There's a very famous saying that when a pickpocket sees a saint, all the pickpocket sees are the pockets. Yeah. So, you know, if that is a state of mind, that in that case would be conditioned by greed, I guess. You know, you see this saint and all you're thinking is, where's the money that I can get? But again, if you're feeling, you may have noticed it this week when we've been here, but the times when we're feeling fairly content and peaceful, we see the hall in a different way. We might think, oh, what a lovely space to be in, and isn't it great that there are these high ceilings, and it's nice to be able to hear the, like right now, the sound of the rain, so we can feel, yeah, in some way dry in here, but we're connected with nature. And isn't it nice the way that the Buddha and Kuan Yin are here, and these enormous plants, and just the care that's been taken over the place. So we may experience it like that we're coming into a very special and beautiful place. But equally, if we were to see the very same space through the lens of a more irritated state of mind, we'll see completely different things. Yeah. We might think, oh, there's one or two. In fact, I can see one here now. You see, there's an area here that could do with a little bit of paint. And paint's chipped off the wall. And maybe the fire exit sign in that big green is not what I'd expect in a Zen temple, and then there's something above the door, I'm not quite sure what that is, and so you start to see it in a different way. Now I can see the wires coming out of that speaker again, you know, it's a bit messy, isn't it? Maybe we could cover those up. Just to be clear, this is not a, you know, don't think, oh, he came in and he was being really rude about the hall. I'm just illustrating the point, you see. If you start to look for what's missing, what's wrong, what's not okay, it doesn't matter. You can really very quickly find it. So mindfulness of states of mind is really, helping us to see this. You know, the way that our experience is shaped and filtered by a mood of the moment. I mentioned yesterday how this can happen when people have low mood or people are depressed. You know, the whole sense of themselves or the world, the future, other people is all shaped by that mood. You know, so I'm no good, the future is hopeless, the world is a place where you can't trust anybody. And if that's true of that low mood, we can actually generalize from that and to see it's actually true from all moods. Actually, all moods can shape our whole sense of who we are. You may notice that. Again, your sense of who you are can be very different on these different days. For many of us, there may have been moments where, you know, the state of mind comes up, I'm not cut out for this. You know, I can't do this. I'm not the kind of person who can meditate. And there may be other times when maybe things are feeling more smooth, where you think, I've really found this. I've become really calm. You know, I am a calm person now. And then we start to sort of, tell a story of who we are out of that. So one of the things that's tricky about mind states is that because they're all pervasive, they're actually difficult to see. Because they're all pervasive, they're actually difficult to see. It's a little bit like the idea of a fish trying to be aware of the water, because it's all around. It's just what we swim in. So it can be helpful every now and again just to drop in that question, what's the state of mind right now? The state of mind right now, and that can help us make that first move in the RAIN teaching from not knowing what's present to recognizing. And it's hugely helpful, you know, in our everyday life. Hugely helpful. For instance, to know we're in a more irritated state of mind. Because if we don't know that, then we just think, that's in the wrong place, and that person's doing the wrong thing, and that shouldn't be there, and that's gone wrong. And we tend to see it all as being outside of ourselves. Whereas actually, if we know that, it's very helpful information. One aspect of this teaching that I have thought about a lot is how to hold in mind some different perspectives we can have on our states of mind. And in the classical Buddhist psychology, these states of mind are distinguished as being wholesome and being unwholesome. So in other words, an unwholesome state of mind is one that is shaped by greed and hatred and delusion, and a wholesome state of mind is said to be one that's not shaped by those qualities. So a state of mind full of friendliness or loving kindness or compassion would be seen as a wholesome state of mind. And a state of mind shaped by greed or hatred would be seen as unwholesome. And I've thought a lot about how to square that with some other teachings that we hear. So sometimes in Jon Kabat-Zinn's definition of mindfulness, so he describes it as being non-judgmental. And so whatever we experience, we can notice it, be aware of it, without judgment. And this actually is a very helpful teaching, because for many of us, let's say if we feel angry, for instance, we've already had quite a lot of messages from childhood perhaps, or from other society, you know, I shouldn't be angry, shouldn't be feeling this, this shouldn't be here, this is something that's in some way wrong. And what we notice is if we start adding a load of judgment and self-criticism and resistance to such a state of mind, it actually, it makes it even more solid, can make it bigger, can make it grow. It's almost like adding fuel to the fire. So there's this very skillful sense of actually allowing things to be. This is the A of RAIN, isn't it? Including, and perhaps particularly, the states of mind that we find more difficult. So I think very often our practice is about making space for those, making peace for those. There's also this perspective that actually, you know, emotions like sadness, anger, anxiety, worry, they're all just a normal part of being human beings as well. So sometimes it can be that there's a little thinking to do, reflecting to do around how to kind of hold together these different perspectives. So when we do use terms like wholesome and unwholesome, I think they need a little bit of care for us, that we don't just begin to use those as a way to be judgmental or self-critical about states of mind that arise. And again, on the level of what can be practically useful, I'm very drawn to, again, an idea from psychotherapy, which is the idea of validating. You know, validating means you're really listening to the feeling, really acknowledging it, really recognizing it. And you can see how this works interpersonally. If you're very upset about something, and somebody says to you, calm down. I don't know about you, but it's usually an unhelpful thing to be told, right, calm down. Yeah. Or another version of calm down is you're overreacting. Now, I think what happens is when somebody says that, or again, when we say it to ourselves, is that it's like part of us that wants to be heard thinks, well, hang on, I haven't been heard here, I need to shout louder. And that's why you notice if you tell someone to calm down, very often they actually get more upset. Because the upset is saying, there's something here that needs to be heard. Something here needs to be attended to. So I think both within our own experience and in how we relate to others, we can explore this sense of listening, welcoming. And that is subtle, because it doesn't mean believing every thought that arises. I'll move on to that. You know, when we feel very upset, for instance, all kinds of thoughts can arise that when we look at them are not necessarily realistic. You know, this is terrible, this is a nightmare, this is awful. But my sense is that until we've actually really felt and heard the pain that is underneath those kind of thoughts, it's not particularly useful to challenge them. That makes sense. Again, you can think about that. Interpersonally, if somebody says, I've had a nightmare of a day, and you say, well, actually, I don't think it was a nightmare, you know, I'm sure lots of good things happen. You'd be like, hang on, you haven't heard me. But if you listen to them and you hear how the day's gone, after a while, they may say, yeah, okay, it was a tough day, but maybe some good things happened too. Does that make sense? So we get to this more balanced perspective through listening, through connecting with painful feelings and emotions. So that's one of the paradoxes of practice. A skillful way of working with the so-called unwholesome is to give it space, to listen, to feel, to sense what's underneath. And as part of this contemplation of mind or mind states, we can also reflect on how we relate to thoughts in our practice, and we can be aware of our thoughts. Again, it's helpful not to see thought as in some way the enemy of our practice. It's almost a stereotype of meditation, isn't it, that somehow we're trying to get rid of thoughts, or thoughts are the obstacle or the enemy. But actually we can use thoughts in all sorts of ways. I mean, when we do the metta practice, we're skillfully using thought, aren't we, in meditation? You know, may I be safe and protected. May I be peaceful. May I live with ease. These are skillful thoughts that we use in our practice. And so we're not trying to get rid of thoughts as we practice. A more helpful way of looking at it is we're trying to see thoughts as thoughts, or we're learning to see thoughts as thoughts, rather than fixed or final realities. So we're more and more able to step back from the thoughts and witness them and see their nature. And when we see their nature, we see that they're very fleeting. They come and they go. We can see their nature as being conditioned, for instance, conditioned by the mood of the moment. This is the connection between mood and thoughts, isn't it? As I said, a low mood produces thoughts like, I'm no good, I've failed again. Sometimes the image would be just like, you know, like the mouth is producing saliva. This is what it does. So like our mood just naturally kind of produces thoughts that reflect that mood. So we can start to see thoughts in this way as fleeting, as changing. And again, not as a fixed and final, definite sense of how things are. One thing that always makes me smile is when I notice I'm having thoughts about where's my life going, what do I need to do, do I need to change everything? And then sometimes I have a sleep and something to eat and those thoughts disappear. Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So the thoughts are saying, I've got to work this out. But actually, if there's some other change, maybe sometimes movement, exercise can do the same thing. One of my teachers says, you know, to shift the thought, move the body. And see what happens if you go for a brisk walk. So the time thinking can be more tricky for us is when, again, there's this automatic pattern of snowballing thinking that I described yesterday, papancha in Pali, papancha. It's actually quite similar to what in psychology would be described as rumination, which is chewing something over again and again and again. And so this can be automatic patterns of thought that, when we're unaware of them, can pull us down more and more into a more difficult states of mind. So again, part of our practice, I think, is to begin to discern, you know, when thoughts can be really skillful and helpful, reflective thoughts, when thoughts are more automatic and, yeah, like this kind of whirlpool of pulling us down. One of the ways that's said to work, and by the way, just as an aside, in case you're wondering why I keep referring to this, part of my training has been in mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, which was originally developed for depression. So often in that therapy, you know, trying to understand what happens in a depressed mind is a sort of doorway into understanding the mind in general. But for those of us who have vulnerability to depression, one of the things that's said to happen is that when we feel sad, we get an ordinary sad mood, which again is just part of being human, sometimes things are like that, that we then, that triggers a rumination. Why am I so sad? What is wrong with me that I feel so sad? I'm always going to feel like this. And then in order to somehow try and work it out, we bring back all the memories of every other time we felt sad, everything that's gone wrong in our life, everything else that's been difficult. So, you know, one thing that's happened that's difficult, and then we start bringing in all these other things. And so one of the ways that mindfulness really helps with this is to be able to recognize thoughts as thoughts, to be able to choose to place the attention elsewhere. Yeah. So even if you do notice this kind of automatic thinking that feels unhelpful, again, it's not that we then suddenly think, I need to get rid of this, I need to push this away. But it's more subtle than that, isn't it? I'm noticing that. It's actually what we've been doing all retreat. We notice it, and we choose to disengage, and we choose to place the attention elsewhere. Yeah. Every time you do that, it's like we're not feeding these patterns. You can do it. You choose to place the attention back on the breath. Choose to place the attention back on the body. Choose to notice the sound. And there's this shift from our attention just going in a habitual direction to, yeah, more helpful, skillful places to place the attention. So, yeah, today the encouragement would be at times to really open the awareness as you practice. And again, Zohar was talking about this sense, wasn't she, of opening up to a sense of the whole body, you know, being aware of the whole of the body, and that sense of the awareness maybe being within the body or around the body, this image of a cocoon. And we can really play with our practice of making the object of our focus more narrow and more broad. And again, this is not about right or wrong. It's not that one's better than another. But actually, we learn different things, or we can see different things from practicing in those different ways. So sometimes it's very skillful to have a particular focus, can help the calming and gathering of the mind. But today, many times, if you wish, you could really open the awareness. So you may feel or imagine that the awareness could fill the whole hall. If that makes sense, but even if you close your eyes now, you can have a kind of sense of the ceiling and the walls. And then, of course, if it can fill the whole hall, then the walls and the ceiling are no boundary. It can go outwards. And with that open awareness, you may say a little bit like a wide-angle lens on a camera, we start to simply be aware of whatever arises and whatever calls our attention in the moment. So thoughts come and go, and those can be noticed as part of our awareness. Body sensations come and go, sounds come and go. And as we do that, at times we can get a real sense, a very strong felt sense of how all of these different things come and go. We start to see their impermanent nature, their changing nature. Yeah, the flickering, moving objects of experience. Thoughts arise and pass, sounds arise and pass, sensations in the body arise and pass. And as we're present with that, we can also at times sense a kind of stillness in the middle of it all. And the image that we often use, we can feel or imagine that the awareness is like the sky, like a vast blue sky. And then these other objects are like clouds that come and go within this space. I really like this image. You know, some days the clouds feel like they're completely covering the sky, right? And the thoughts are really strong, persistent. And there's an art to practicing this. If with an open awareness at times it feels as if we've lost a sense of balance and steadiness and we're just getting drawn into train of thought after train of thought, it can be more skillful again then to say, okay, well, let's simplify again. Come back to the body on the ground, come back to the breath. And so there's a dance between the more particular focus and this open awareness. We can learn to creatively move between them. So, in a moment I'll guide us through a practice that supports this open awareness. And if you want a minute or so to move your legs to shift posture, please feel free. So, beginning to find your posture, in which there's as much as feels possible, a balance of being upright, also being at ease. Taking a moment to notice how things are for you right now, the thoughts and the feelings that are present. Maybe things feel quite smooth and easy, maybe more stirred up. And as much as feels possible, that sense of noticing, of allowing. Again, allowing the attention to come down into the body and to move all the way down into the legs and into the feet. And so how does it feel to bring a freshness to this question? What's it like to feel the contact with the ground? We've been doing it a few times. So as much as feels possible, a sense of freshness. How does it feel now? The direct physical sensations of connection with the ground, the pressure, tingling, twinges maybe. Maybe no particular sensations standing out. Just noticing, feeling the ground beneath you. Gently encouraging this sense of awareness in the body, connected with the ground, connected with the earth. and also the sense of really taking your seat. How does that feel right now, to feel the chair or the cushion beneath you, that connection? And finding the sense of the seat and the ground can be a real refuge in the midst of whatever else is present. Can feel the earthy quality, sitting bones, taking your seat. As we settle into the practice, and noticing other parts of the body too, aware of the hands, it's the gentle intention to let the fingers and thumbs be at ease. Noticing the shoulders, how do they feel right now? Giving some attention to the shoulder. Perhaps noticing areas of tension, areas of ease. It's present with both. And also noticing the face. Soft intention to let go of any frown. Letting the muscles around the eyes be at ease. Noticing the jaw. And then from here, widening the awareness to include a sense of the whole of the body, all the way from the toes to the top of the head, the whole body. Perhaps it feels that the awareness is around the body, suffusing the body. And within this whole body awareness, allowing the attention just to rest on the breath as it comes and goes. noticing when particular sensations in the body call the attention, and spending some time with those, allowing these to be included in the meditation, to gently explore them, sense them, feel them. Do they stay the same? Do they change? Is there any tensing or tightening around them? At times you may wish to feel or imagine you can send the breath to them. Widening the awareness to include the sensations that come and go, breathing with them. Once again, really sensing the contact with the ground, feeling the seat, so these points are a base we can return to, a refuge. And from there, beginning to open the awareness wider still. And including the sounds that come and go. Allowing a wide and receptive awareness. You can receive the changing sounds. Feel or imagine that the awareness is like the sky, like the vast blue sky. And these sounds like the clouds that come and go within the space. Breathing with them, letting them be. once again, checking in with the body, that sense of ground and seat, the rhythm of breathing. These are places we can go to steady the attention. To collect and gather the attention. And then from there, once again, this more open awareness that now can also include thoughts. And noticing how the thoughts are in many ways just like the sound. They pop into the mind, seemingly from nowhere. They're around for a while, they fade. Fleeting, changing, shifting. So the sense that the awareness is like the sky, the vast blue sky. And the thoughts, like clouds, coming and going within this space. Breathing with them, letting them be. And in the last few minutes of the practice, exploring this open awareness, broad and wide, spacious awareness. And aware of whatever comes and goes in this space. Thoughts and sounds, sensations, feelings, images, all coming and going. And within this changing flow of experience, allowing the attention just to rest and be still.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.